is the very beginning.
That's why I say you need the first page here that I gave you in order to see it, okay? The Mishnah begins by saying, Shofar shel Rosh Hashanah, Ein ma'avirin olovis ha'tchum, v'ein mefakin olovis ha'gal. Okay, okay, that's the very first statement, okay. So it says the Rosh Hashanah's shofar, in other words, the shofar that you need to blow on Rosh Hashanah, the first thing that you cannot do is to go beyond the boundary for it. Now, when I explained it last week, I said that in my impression, I think it also has to do with carrying the shofar. You're not allowed to carry it beyond the tchum, because we have similar passages that speak about not to carry a Megillah on Shabbos, not to carry a lulav in the Nesrik on Shabbos. We had all these, if you remember. Okay? Not allowed to do it, because even though the Torah says that you are to do it, but you cannot violate the laws of Shabbos with it. Rashi, however, takes in the sense that if, let's say, somebody is blowing shofar beyond the tchum, you know, let's say in a town where it would require a long walk on your part, you know, beyond the tchum, and then in that particular case, you're not allowed to do it. So even though it's a mitzvah to hear the sound of the shofar, but nevertheless, it's a mitzvah also not to violate the Shabbat. So that this is what the discussion is based on right now. So Gemara says, "My Tama." What is the reason? Okay, that's the second line from the bottom. You can see. Okay, it says, "Shofar asehu, the yom tov asehu lo sasem." Okay, as you know, the mitzvahs in the Torah are divided into two categories. Okay, one category is called the mitzvahs asei. These are what I like to call an affirmative commandment. Okay, very often they say a positive commandment. Okay. The idea is that this you do, okay? On the other hand, we have more mitzvahs which are in the category of lo sasem, okay? You shall not do this and don't do that and don't do the other thing, you know, because a violation of that, you know, would be a transgression, okay? So, he says, shofar asehu. The mitzvah of blowing the shofar, this is a mitzvah sase. The Torah says, blow the shofar, right? Bachodesh hashviyi, be'echad lachodesh, right? In the seventh month, the first day of the month, right? Mikra kodesh yilalchem, it's to be a holy day of holy convocation. Yom teruah yilalchem, okay? It's to be a day of the sounding of teruah, okay? This is what it says. So that's a mitzvah sase. We have to do it. But Yom Tov has in it two different types. You have an affirmative side to it, and you have a negative side. Is that right? It's very clear if we take a look at the very bottom of the page in the very tiny print. And that's the commentary of Rabbeinu Chananel. Okay, second line from the bottom over there. You see what it says, Shofar shel Rosh Hashanah, Mefakin Alois Hagal, and so on, which we'll come to in a second. But he says, My Tama, he says, Ditakiya Shofar, the Hu Yom Teruah, Yelochem, right? That the fact that Rosh Hashanah is a day for the blowing of the shofar, this is an Asay, right? Asayhu. Okay? But the Ein Asay, as we'll see in a second, an affirmative commandment does not does not push aside an ase velos ase shel Rosh Hashanah. What is the affirmative commandment connected with Rosh Hashanah? That, of course, we said you have to sound the shofar, right? And what is the lo sase? We'll see in a second. Okay. Shenemar says, Bachodesh hashviyi b'yechad lachodesh, right? That's what the Pasuk says on the seventh month, on the first day of the month. Yiyeh lochem shabboson. All right? So what does Shabbosol mean? Shabbosol means Shavuos. Okay? Which, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, means Klomer. In other words, he says, shave v'lo sa'aseh. Okay? This is, do, you know, observe, rest, and don't, okay? Rest. Okay. This is a day of resting. Okay? But Uchsiv Nameh, however, it's also written,
you're not allowed to do anything which is in the category Meleches Aveda. Meleches Aveda means that you're not allowed to do any kind of work which would be a violation of Shabbos. Let me make clear again that in reference to Shabbos, we all know. I mean, there are affirmative commandments and there are negative commandments. What is an affirmative commandment for Shabbos? The answer is Zochor es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. This is an affirmative commandment. Of course, in the Gemara and Shabbos, they want to know, so how do you do it? What is the affirmative sign? The answer is, you make kiddush, you put on nice clean clothes, you celebrate Shabbos, to know that this is a very special day, okay? What is the negative side? Negative side is expressed by the other one. Shomor is Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. Shomor, as we've had from time to time in various discussions of the Gemara, means that you are to observe in the sense of don't cause any violation. Now, of course, what would be the basic violation? The basic violation is to do work on Yom Shabbos, right? Now, the same law about not doing any work also applies to Yontif, okay? Particularly, it's clear from what the Torah says, very soon we'll be reading it in Parsha Bo, about Pesach, all right? It says, V'chol melocha lo yeyoseh bohem. No melacha is to be done on these days, right? Meaning, you know, on the first day of Pesach, the seventh day of Pesach. Of course, we extend it also for the second and the eighth, okay? But then, in connection with Yontif, the next phrase in that same pasuk is, Ach, asher yoyachil lechol nefesh, ulevado yoyoseh lechem. However, it says, when it comes to preparing food for the human being, this alone is permitted to you on Yontif. So in other words, we make a distinction between a Yontif which occurs on a weekday as compared to a Yontif which occurs on Shabbos. If it's a Yontif which occurs on Shabbos, then in that case the same laws of Shabbos apply to Yontif, in the sense that you're not allowed to, you know, started to cook on Shabbos, you're not allowed to make fires, you're not allowed to carry, and things like that. You understand? That's prohibited on a Yontif which occurs on Shabbos. However, if it is a Yontif which occurs on a weekday, then you're not allowed to go into work, still not allowed to do any writing and things like that, and so on and so forth, right? You're not allowed to write, and then, you know, these things we don't do, period. Okay. But what are we permitted to do? We are permitted, however, to cook food. Now, what is involved in cooking food? Well, for example, you're allowed, you know, if you have a fire to begin with that was prepared before Yontif, then in that case, you are allowed to, let's say, light another fire with it or something like that, okay? If you need, let's say, two burners on the stove, you're allowed to do that, okay? You're also allowed, of course, to carry on Yontif, because we say betoch shehutra letzorech hutra shelo letzorech, inasmuch as permission was given for the needs of getting food, you know, carrying it and bringing it and so on and so forth, so therefore carrying in general is a permissible act. This is the reason why, let's say, even without an Erev, right, you can bring a child to shul on Yontif, let's say in a baby carriage or something like that, okay, which on Shabbos you don't do unless you're in an area which has an Erev around it, okay? You're allowed to carry your talis to shul and say, bring it in the talis bag. On Shabbos you're not allowed to. You want to wear a talis on Shabbos, either have it in shul or wrap it around you and wear it as a garment. That's the way you do it, you know. Particularly now at the winter time, it's not a problem. It's an additional warming garment, you know. But these are the stations. So, okay. So, we see then that in Rosh Hashanah, besides the fact that we have, first of all, the affirmative commandment that says, blow the shofar, yom tzroya yolachem, right? But there's an additional affirmative command, because it says Shabbason, which means treat it like a Shabbos. In other words, it's a very special day, right? But at the same time, don't do any melechus avoda, don't do any work. So we, case of Rosh Hashanah, we see that there is both an affirmative commandment and also a negative commandment. So this leads now to a general principle, which the Gemara says, that what? Says, V'ein asei doches lo sa'aseh ve'aseh. Sometimes it happens that an asei, in other words, the affirmative commandment, can set aside a negative. Of course, I'm not going into a discussion of all this right now, because, you know, you'd have to know. It's only in certain particular cases, okay? We learned it, for example, in Gemara Makkos. I mean, for example, we had the business about Pigol, okay?
Pigol.
Does anybody remember Pigol?
Yeah.
That's a place in Paris, Place Pigou. Yeah.
I remember.
Making a joke. There's a place, Place Pigou. But I'll tell you, Place Pigou, you see Pigou over there too. Pigou means technically that a sacrifice has to be eaten within the amount of time that the Torah prescribed for it. Once you go beyond that, then it becomes pigul, which means a disgusting thing. That's why I say, you know, plus pigul has plenty of disgusting things too. Okay, I've been to Paris. All right. So this is a negative commandment, right? Negative commandment is v'hanosor ad yom ha'shlishi, right? Okay, whatever is left over, the nosor is pigul. Okay, not allowed to eat it. But is there something you can do to rectify the fact that you have committed a violation of a lo sasa? And the answer is yes. In this particular case, the Torah says, va'esh yisorev, burn it in fire. Okay, not allowed to eat it, but destroy it with that, and at least you get rid of the nosor that way. Okay, so here is a case, for example, where an asay can correct a violation of a lo sasem. Okay? But here, in the case of Rosh Hashanah, where you have an asay, but you have an asay and a lo sasem, so the principle is that in that particular case, ein asay doches lo sasem asay. It cannot set aside something which has a double prohibition, a double mitzvah. An affirmative mitzvah and a negative mitzvah. That outweighs the asay. So, in other words, what he's saying is, while it is true that blowing the shofar is an asay, but you're not allowed to do those things which are lo sasa in order to accomplish that, because of the fact that in this case you have a double whammy over there. Okay? Then, it says, lo olin be'ilon ve'lo rochvin al gabi behema, right? Not allowed to climb up on a tree. This is what the Mishnah had to say, okay? It's the last line now. They're not allowed to climb up on a tree in order to get a shofar. Ve'lo rochvin al gabi behema, nor are you allowed to, you know, to ride on a behema in order to carry a shofar so you can blow it. Not allowed to do it. So the Gemara says, hashto the rabbonon amit lo, the rice me boy, says, look, the first part of the Mishnah, where it says, for example, you're not allowed to violate the law against going beyond the tchum, right? Or the in the fakim alav es hagal, you're not allowed to, to remove a whole heap of stones in order to get to a shofar underneath. All right, so that's, he says, midoraisa. That's a... All right, but this is the point. The point here is a little different. The point here is that the first things that are mentioned in the Mishnah, these are violations of things that are, we call, the oraisa. The Torah itself commands us that there's a violation, okay? The next category that we have over there, climbing up on the tree or riding on a behemoth, this is prohibited not by the Torah, but it's prohibited by the Rabbanan. Okay? The Rabbanon prohibited. Okay. So, yes. No, they're based. Maybe somebody hung it. Okay, so you have to realize that at times they simply propound theoretical questions. Yeah, at times they do, absolutely.
When you
it's so far-fetched.
Sure. To us it's far-fetched. Yeah, but they're making a point. You're not allowed to violate something, no matter whether it is a prohibition from the Torah or it has been prohibited by the rabbis. That's what he's saying.
You're saying
yes.
You're saying with some, from Rabbanan.
The rabbis prohibited
the interpretation of the work that you're not allowed to do on Yom Tov either.
They're correct.
You're not allowed to ride an animal.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. Yeah, right. It says you're not allowed to do these things. Okay,
right.
Not allowed to do them. Okay, but sure. Yes.
That's what Sylvia said. I'm not so sure it's that facetious, because we learned earlier, a couple of months ago, that we learned about the laws of blowing a shofar in a hole.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah.
Actually, how what part of the shofar, if it projected from the hole,
yeah,
could
right.
be making your team.
Correct, that's one
okay.
possibility, yeah. Or let's say when he blew it, his head was up above over there,
right.
And even though the rest
yeah.
of the body was inside over there, or if everybody was in the pit itself, then in that particular case,
yeah, okay.
if he was blew within the pit, then the people would be yoicer with it.
Okay, and this
yeah.
all was premised, especially the last example
yeah.
you gave, on the need for concealment.
Yeah, in that particular case,
okay.
right, obviously.
Likewise,
yeah.
you might make the argument that here, leaving a shofar in a tree where
yeah.
it would be hidden
right.
from view.
Right,
scared.
Right, hidden from
hidden
view
from
in
view
order to escape, let's say, the authorities
reason.
Or something during the time that they prohibited the blowing of shofar,
right.
which we
That's
spoke
so.
About the
and
other week.
Actually
yeah.
getting
yeah.
that shofar in order to
yeah.
use it
yeah.
would be a real possibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, not just the
look at it from either
abstract.
Point of view. Right. I mean, it could be, you know, a situation which is real, or maybe it's a theoretical one. Okay.
Not a lot of climb the tree to get the shofar. You can't. You don't have a shofar to blow.
Yeah, but you have to do it before the yontif.
Right. You do it before the yontif.
Yeah, before yontif, you can do it. Of course, there's no question. Then there's no prohibition. But talking about on yontif itself, you're not allowed to. Okay. We realize that. But the point that they're making, as I say over here, he says, "Hashtu the rabbanan amrit lo." Here, in this last phrase, he said that those things which are prohibited by the rabbis, you say you're not allowed to violate it. So, the Reisman boy, so was it necessary even to state the first part of the Mishnah where we speak about violations of the Torah itself? Why do they have to have it? So they say, Zu, the Ein Tzorech Lomar Zu Katanim, the answer is that this is part of the style that they want to say this is prohibited, and we don't have to mention the fact that the other thing is also prohibited. Okay? Alright, now we start the new page, and on the new page, okay, it looks very small, right? The text. But there's a great big Tosfos that I do want to touch upon. We won't do the entire Tosfos, but I do want to take some selections from it. We'll see in a second. Okay. But at any rate, the first thing over there, on the top of the page, this is now Lamed Gimel Omed Aleph. Okay. So it says, V'en choschin oso, bein bedover shehu mishum shvus, v'en bedover shehu mishum lo saseh. Okay. This is what the Mishnah said. You know, they always, you notice, they quote the Mishnah first, and then they discuss what is the Mishnah all about. Okay? So, the Mishnah said, you're not allowed to cut the shofar, literally, whether with something which is prohibited only by shvus. Shvus, remember, means the rabbis say, don't do it, right? Because we want to prevent a violation of something which is even more serious, which is with the raisa, right? Or you're not allowed to cut it with something which is actually a violation of the Torah law itself concerning what? Concerning what you're allowed to do on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. Okay?
What are you cutting?
Yeah, I don't understand.
Good. It's a good question. The answer is really it means taking a shofar and scraping it out. Now, what would be the normal way that you would scrape out the stuff from inside in order to be able? That's one possibility, by the way. Another possibility, which is Rabbeinu Hananel's, is that actually you go to an animal, and what do? And you cut off the shofar from the animal in order to be able to have a shofar. You're not allowed to do that either on Yom Tov, okay? That means to us it sounds a little far-fetched because we're used to shofars that are already prepared, right?
Yeah. If it weren't blowing right, it would say you could put water or wine in.
Yeah, all right, because that improves the...
Somebody would want to scrape out a little bit, you know.
Yeah, that's a good question. Okay. On Yom Tov, you can't do it. No, you cannot do it either with one thing. Now, they're also going to explain, as for example, they want to give an example. That's the next line over there. It says, Mishum Shavuos, for example, what would be prohibited by the rabbis in this particular case? In other words, it's not an actual violation based on the Torah law because you are doing it with something which is not the usual manner. Here we have a new element that enters into it. The new element that enters into it is that there are certain things which are either permissible or at least it's not as great a violation by doing it in an unusual fashion. We call that Mishum Shinui. Shinui means you're making a change in the ordinary way of doing things. Okay? So, he says Mishum Shavuos in the case of, we said you're not allowed to do, to violate this preparation of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah itself, either by something which is prohibited by the rabbis, and they give the example of magla. What's a magal? Magla is only the Aramaic one. It's a sickle, a scythe, a sickle. This is what it means, okay? Now, normally, if you wanted, let's say, to scrape out a shofar, you're not going to take a scythe and go inside of it. So that this represents a shinui, okay? So we might assume that what? That because we're doing it with a change, it's different from the normal way of doing it, so that therefore you're allowed to do it, or at least you're not violating, not committing a major transgression with it, okay? But nevertheless, as we say, you're not allowed to do it either, okay? Lo sase. And how about a prohibition which would actually be based upon the interpretation that, we say that on Shabbos there are lavates of ismalochas, that there are 39 different major categories of laws, pertaining to violations of the Shabbos, okay? 39 different categories. They are, of course, enumerated in the Gemara and Masechet Shabbos over there. Some things are obvious to us, okay? But some are, for example, in reference, let's say, to the Mishkan, which is the ultimate source of it, that you have different things. For example, tying kosher is a prohibited malacha. The question is, under what circumstances? Dyeing, painting, there's no question. I mean, that is a prohibition.
Squeezing, melting.
Yeah, squeezing is another element, yes. With Rabbi Tzita, I'm sure that you're learning all kinds of prohibitions these days, right?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So, right. So he says, well, Sasa, I'll give you an example. He says, Sakina, if you would use a knife, this is the ordinary way of doing it, so that this also would be prohibited. So again, they say the same thing that we had at the bottom of the previous page. It says, Hashto Mishum Shavuos Amrit. Okay, inasmuch as you already told us that these things are prohibited, even if they're only rabbinic, right, in their origin. So, Lo Sasem Baye. So, do you have to ask a question as to whether things that would be a violation of the Torah itself? So he gives again the same answer, Zuvi ain Sarak Lamazu Katani. In other words, yeah, okay, we learned this, and we don't have to even mention the fact that we're learning the other. But nevertheless, what? For the sake of, what shall we say, style, symmetry, you name it, all right? If we say this, and also I don't have to mention that this is, okay?
So this whole portion is, yeah, is just to prove that you're not allowed to do
these things, either because they are biblically prohibited, but even if they are only prohibited by the rabbah, that you're not allowed to do it. Okay. In other words, prepare your shofar beforehand that you have it. You don't have to go to the animal and cut it off or scrape it out or anything like that. These things have to be done in advance.
Scraping it off to the side?
Huh?
The side.
That's why they say this is a shinui, right? It's different, but nevertheless, even that would be prohibited. That's shavus. Okay?
And the rabbi said,
shinui means doing it in a changed way. Make a change on how you do it, okay?
Yeah, because instead of using a knife, you use a sickle.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. Okay.
That's a good point.
Yeah. And then the next one says, but if he wanted to put into the shofar either water or wine, then he's permitted to do that. I mean, that you're allowed to do in order to improve the sound of the shofar, to make it easier to handle and so on. So the Gemara comes in.
Oh, wow. This is terrible.
Okay. All right. But again, you know, the Torah and the Gemara wants to consider the various contingencies. Okay.
Right.
So it says, we don't have to skip it. It's nothing so kefir, because I'll come back to something else in that reference. Right. It says, Mayim o Yayin in. Yeah. Okay. Sure. You're permitted to use either water or wine, but Meraglayim, no. You're not allowed to do what? You're not allowed to use urine in order to do it. Urine would do a very nice job of softening the shofar and making it sit, but you're not allowed to do it. Right? No question. I mean, there are some, of course, the valuable properties in the urine too, you know. Okay.
Part of the prayer.
Yes, I'm coming to that. Okay, you're right. Okay, right. Okay, yeah, it shows that you read the English over there. Okay, so, all right, let me finish this phrase first of all. Okay. So they say, Matnissimani says, this Baraisa, this teaching, who is the author of that? So they say, Abishol. It happens to be Abishol. The Tanya, as we've learned in Baraisa, Abishol Oimer, the Abishol says, Mayim o Yayin Utor, Kedei Letzachzecho, you're allowed to use either water or wine in order to scrub it or clean it or something like that. Let's say clean it, okay?
Right.
But Meiraglayim also Mipnei Akovet, but you're not allowed to use urine because it's not proper to do so. It's not covetic to do it,
even
for a shofar. All right. Now, of course, several of you have already noted the fact that we have a similar thing. We say it every time that you say Pita Baktoris. You know, after Enkel Kena, right?
Yeah.
That we speak about, you know, the different ingredients that went into the making of the incense, right? And some of the things had to be steeped in order to, get them in the proper form. And then it says, well, there, right, Lo Meraglayim Yofinlo, right? Shouldn't urine also, wouldn't that be good, you know, for this particular purpose? Because, you know, whatever it does, it's acidic or something of other ways, so it would do a good job. Elo Shein Machdisi Meraglayim Ba'azorim Deyakom. But we're not allowed. Or another reading, you're not allowed to go into the temple and use urine as an element in preparing of this. So it's a similar idea. Don't use urine either, you know, for preparing the shofar in order to give it a greater sound. Okay, what time is it now? I'll tell you. I'd rather stop at this point because the next thing we're going to deal with the problem about women and shofar blowing. And for this, we have a Tosfos, and the Tosfos is liable to be kind of lengthy. So, Yes, Hashem, next week we'll go into that.
Something
okay.
to look forward to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like
it'll be this whole section here.
All right. Tonight is the 17th, I believe, of the month of January in the year 2001. And we are continuing now. Gemara Rosh Hashanah. End of the tape on the other side. We are in Rosh Hashanah. Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph. Okay. The Mishnah says, Ein ma'akvin es hatinokos b'tekoat. We do not prevent young children from blowing shofar. So, first of all, to get the better picture, let's take a look once more at what the Mishnah actually said. And that's on the previous page, Lamed Beis, Amud Beis, where it said that... let's see, who been over here?
It's about the fourth line up on the left hand side.
Oh, yeah, at the bottom over there. Okay, right. All right, it said that, let's read the following. Okay, it says, first of all, okay, you do not prevent young children from blowing shofar. And then the rest of the Mishnah says, Avol mis'atskini mohen ad she'yul midu. But instead, you concern yourself with them. In other words, you spend time with them until they learn how to blow the shofar. Okay? And then the Mishnah said, V'hamis'asek lo yotzo. But the person who is simply spending the time and trying to teach them, you know, how to blow, is simply busying himself with it. So, he is not... Yotze, he doesn't fulfill the obligation of blowing shofar. The hashomea min hamisasek lo yotza. And likewise, the person who hears the misasek, this person who is simply having a practice session, if he hears the sounds of the shofar, he's not yotze with it. Why? Because this we learned a long, long time before, that the ideal situation is always what? That mitzvos tzrichos kavodah. And even though there are contrary opinions, but the basic idea is that when you perform a mitzvah, you have to have the kavodah that you want to fulfill the mitzvah that you're praising the Rebbeinu Shalom for. I mean, after all, we make a brocha, asher k'nishon mitzvosov, mitzivano, right? We praise God, you know, who has sanctified us with commandments and commanded us to do this and this, so that therefore when we recited we want to fulfill, that is, we indicate that we want to fulfill the mitzvah exactly the way it is. So if the misasek is simply practicing, just having a practice session, he doesn't have in mind at the time that what? That he wants to blow the shofar in order to fulfill the mitzvah blowing shofar. In that case, if you listen to him, you also have not fulfilled the obligation. You have to find somebody who, as we learned also a long time ago, that not only the shomea has to have, you know, the kavana of doing it, that is, he has to have the person who hears the sound of the shofar has to have the kavana that he wants to fulfill the mitzvah of blowing shofar in Rosh Hashanah, but also the mashmiya, the person who literally is causing the sounds of the shofar to be heard. In other words, the shofar blower also has to have in mind what? That he wants to enable whoever is listening to the sounds of the shofar that they should be able to fulfill the mitzvah of hearing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Okay? So therefore we say that Hamisasek, right, the person who is simply doing it as a practice session, is not Yotze. Okay, so therefore, now getting back to the Gemara over here. The Gemara begins by saying, Ho Noshim Yakvin, which means what? That if a woman blows shofar, then in that particular case, you have not fulfilled the mitzvah if you listen to her blow the shofar. Okay, of course, it's going to lead to a whole problem that we will discuss in a moment. But we continue first with the text of the Gemara. The Hot Tanya, so they bring a contrary quotation. It says, "Ein me'akvin lo es hanoshim lo es hatinokos milatkoa biyomta." There is Gemara in Ervin which says that we do not prevent either women or young children from blowing on Yontif, in other words, on Rosh Hashanah. Okay? And then Omar Abaye came along and he said, Lo Kasha, he says, this is not a difficulty because they represent two different opinions, Ho Rabbi Yehuda and Ho Rabbi Yosef, right? One is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, and the other one is the opinion of Rabbi Yosef. Okay, Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Shimon, as well as Rabbi Shimon. Okay, the Tanya, as we have learned, there is the following interpretation of the words Daber el Bnei Yisrael. Okay, it says speak unto. Now, how do we normally translate Bnei Yisrael? We normally translate it as the children of Israel. But as you know, a more literal translation would be speak unto the sons of Israel. Okay? So if we take the strict point of view, then we have to say that Daber el Bnei Yisrael means Bnei Yisrael Somchin, V'ein Benos Yisrael Somchos, Direi Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. We are talking now about Semicha. This has nothing to do at this particular point with whether a person receives ordination as a rabbi or not. We're talking about smicha in the sense where the Torah uses it in reference to korbanos, sacrifices, okay? You want to give a korban in the Beis HaMikdash, right? So, in that particular case, you have the mitzvah of putting your hands on top of the animal that is going to be slaughtered, right, for the korban, and so that way, even though, you know, once smicha has taken place, once the animal actually has been slaughtered, shechita, the kohanim from that point carry on the rest of the service, as we know. Right? In other words, I have to gather blood in order to be able to sprinkle it upon the altar, and if it's parts of an animal that have to be eaten or what, I mean, depending upon the nature of the sacrifice, but the Kohanim from that particular point, they carry on the rest of the service, okay? But you have your own part to do in the service, and that part is that you're going to dedicate this animal, so to speak, right, by putting your hands on it. So, according to Rabbi Yehuda, men can do this, but he says women do not perform smicha. This is his point of view, okay? Okay. And Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Shimon, they come along, and Omrim, and they say, Noshim somchos rishus, which means that women can perform smicha on the animal and it's voluntary on their part. In other words, they don't have to do it, but it's voluntary for them. If they feel that they want to do it, they do it. Okay. Now, this leads to a tremendous tosfos, as you can see, all along the side of the page over there, where they're going to discuss this particular problem. Okay. We're not going to do the entire Tosfos, but I do want to take a few of the highlights because it leads into something which is very, very important. Okay? Alright. It's the Tosfos on the very top of the page on the left-hand column, okay, where it says, Ho Rabbi Yehuda, Ho Rabbi Yosi, right? That this is a point of difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosi. So, Omer Rabbeinu Tam is, of course, one of the greatest people in decisions of Tosfos, discussions and decisions and so on. And he says, Afal Gav, even though the Stalmatz Nisan Karabi Yehuda, right, that normally if we have machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda, and normally the halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda. He was considered a greater authority than some of the others, although the others were great scholars and permitted to have a contrary point of view. Okay? So that normally, he says, when it comes to a difference of opinion between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yose, nevertheless, he says, halacha ke Rabbi Yose, dinamuko imam. He says, the halacha technically should follow Rabbi Yose because he has a good point. What is his good point? His good point is that if we take the Gemara, which speaks about Noshim Somchos, right, and that they have a reshus, that they have the privilege of doing so if they wish to, then in that particular case it might also apply to other areas as well. So then he goes into a discussion of some famous cases. Yes, yes, yeah. We haven't come yet down to the bottom of the page. As you can see, there's a lot more over there. Okay, all right. But he brings in a famous case. Right. There is there's a chapter in Ervin called the Motzei Tefillin. Okay. And there's a famous statement that says over there, Michal Bashoel, Oyesom Anachas Tefillin. Okay. Michal, who is the daughter of Shaul, she would put on tefillin. Okay? And another example, the Yishto Shel Yoina, and they say that Yona's wife, Shehoyesa Ulun Regal, okay, she would go on the pilgrimage to Yerushalayim. The reason why it says that is because essentially we have to realize that who has the obligation to go on the three festivals to Yerushalayim to make the pilgrimage. It says, Yeroeh kol zechurcha, all your males shall appear before the Lord your God. So that the woman did not have the obligation of going for Aliyas Regal. Nevertheless, here is the case of Yonah's wife who did this. Okay? Bihahu uvda de perikin doshin. And then there's another case mentioned in the Gemara Chagiga, Perek Ein Doshin, which is, of course, they were not allowed to start into the study, all the esoteric studies, right, unless you reach a certain age and have a certain maturity, etc., etc. That what? The Havinu Huli Ezras Doshim is Somchu Alov Doshim Kedelasos Nachas Ruach the Noshim. That what? That they brought the sacrifice into the Ezras Noshim. Remember that the Beis HaMikdash had various courtyards, right? So the Ezras Noshim was the place where the women would congregate, okay? So it says that we brought the animal that was going to be sacrificed into the Ezras Noshim, right? With some call of Noshim, and then the women performed smicha over there. But why? Kedei lasos nachas racha Noshim, in order to make the women happy. You know the word nachas, okay? So nachas, well, they wanted to make the women happy, so they gave it. All right. So far, we're talking about cases, but as you can obviously see, these are isolated cases, okay? We not to infer from this that automatically, therefore, we do all these things. But here comes the meat of the Tosfos at this point. It says, "Mutaros levorech al mitzvos asei shazman groma, afal gav dipeturos min devar hamitzvah." Okay. In several places, we have a principle which is enunciated in the Mishnah that women are excused from mitzvos which are dependent upon time for their fulfillment, okay? So that therefore the question now is, what happens if a woman, however, feels like fulfilling such a mitzvah? Is it proper to recite the bracha asher kedishonu mitzvosov v'tzivanu al whatever it may be, okay? You understand? Is it proper for a woman to recite that? Because would she be reciting a bracha levatolas, we would say, in other words, a blessing in vain, because she's not required, she has not been commanded to perform this mitzvah, and yet she says what? I praise God, you know, that who commanded us to do this and this, okay? So, even though, after God, the Torah has been var ha-mitzvah, right? Min ha-mitzvah ha-hi, even though the women are excused from having to perform that particular mitzvah, right? U-mitzatzka is bohen. And in that case, it comes right under the category of what? Of misasek. What is misasek? As we say over here, misasek means that you're not fulfilling an obligation, but you're only doing something in order to feel happy about it. Or in the case of the person who is teaching a youngster how to blow shofar, he's a misasek in the sense, you know, that he wants to show him, you know, how to do it. Okay. So, we have the case, says the Gemara, Kemo Michal Bas Kushi. There's a certain woman by the name of Michal, the daughter of Kushi, Shehoyeso Gamme Voreches, who would also make the bracha at the time, what? When she performed the smicha. The Teda, the Aminu Perakach Hobils, the Gemara in Baba Kama, that Omar Rav Yosef Yikora Amrei Mando Mahalocha Rav Yehuda Avdina Yom Tov. He says, if somebody says that we follow the halacha according to Rabbi Yehuda, then in that case it's as if we are making a yontif the rabbon. Okay, the law of cut, right, because we're not commanded yet, we are beaten, nevertheless we do something. Okay. So the imbi mekom the potum in hadover liyosehu. All right. Now, if we are to say as follows, by the way, you realize Tosfos likes to go pros, cons, discuss the matter. You know, what are the pros? What are the cons? And so on and so forth. All right. So the Gemara, the Tosfos continues and says, so imbi mekom the potum in hadover liyosehu. And if we say that where a person is potter from a particular act, right? And nevertheless, he performs this act, so also milaborek, then he is prohibited from making a bracha for this. In Cain, then in that case, amaya vidu yomatova, so why did he say, make it a yontif, if you follow Rabbi Yehuda's opinion? Aloha yomafsid brachos, then if that's the case, you would also do away with the brachas for tzitzis and lulav and tefillin and megillah, right? And their Hanukkah and Sukkah and Havdalah and Kiddush Hayom and brachas shel Kriyas Shema, Shachris V'Yavis, v'chol ha-brachas kulan. Okay. So here we come now to the basic question. Tosfos has enumerated a whole group of mitzvahs, right, where if you want to apply the idea that, okay, you're not required, but you're doing it simply because you want to be happy, well, look at all the different mitzvahs that we have that you would not be able to fulfill if you take this point of view. The bracha of tzitzis, the bracha for lulav, the bracha of tefillin, the bracha for megillah, the bracha for lighting candles on Hanukkah, the bracha for sitting in the sukkah, and Havdalah, and Kiddush Hayom, and so on and so forth, and bracha shel Kriya Shema, and also the brachas that you recite, you know, prior to Kriya Shema, and those that you say afterwards, whether it's the Kriya Shema in the morning service or the evening service, b'chol ha-brachas kulam. The question is then, if you're not commanded, why does a woman have to say a bracha, or why should we, if we're not commanded, have to say a bracha? Okay. The Ode Amrina, now he brings another case. He says, so Amrina Beperek Arve Pesachim, the Gemara in the last chapter of Pesachim, where they deal with the whole business of the sacrifice of the Pesach and the Haggadah and so on and so forth. And so it says over there, Suma Potum Aloma Haggadah. Okay? It says that a blind person is potter, is free from reciting the Haggadah at the Seder. Right? So then they ask the kasha over there, based on Rav Yosef and Rav Sheshes, The Havi Amra Garato Kol Chanda Chanda, they say. On the contrary, these both of them, these great rabbis, happen to be blind, and nevertheless, what did they do? They insisted upon saying the Agoda in their own homes. Right? And if the fact is that they are able to fulfill others, that is, able to fulfill, to help others fulfill the obligation, then Shema Mino, he says, from this we would learn the Mechayevin, that they are obligated, not that it's simply voluntary. Umishana Mishum Nikosavre, and there they said, okay, the reason why they did it is because they were of the opinion that matzah bizman hazeh derabbanan, that the mitzvah of eating matzah, now that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, is something which the Rabbanan have ordained, but Midrash, we would say in the Torah, we don't do it because we don't have what? We don't have a Korban Pesach. Are eating the matzah, you know, or eating the moror, right? Okay, we still know what matzah and moror are, okay. But how about Pesach? We can't slaughter a Korban Pesach. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash. So the fact that we take a shank bone, for example, or an idiot kind, but that's only what? It's a symbol that we put on the table, okay. So that's the Rabbanan. We do it in order to remember how the proper way to observe Pesach, when and if the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, the Beir of Yomena, we would know how to do it properly. But the question was never even raised, why should they even recite a bracha? So Shema Minoah, so therefore, from this we learn what? Heche devetire shoi levruchi, that where a person is free from the obligation, nevertheless, what? If you wish, it is permitted to make a bracha. Umishum de mevorech bracha shenetzmicha v'ko'ovar mishum baltisa. And now let's raise another question. If you say that you are reciting a bracha which is unnecessary, and as a result, what are you doing? You are violating the commandment which says what? Do not take the name of God in vain. Okay? So he says, Lako. Says, no, that doesn't apply. Dehahi drasha derabbanan. Because that is a drasha, you know, that's, it's an inference of the rabbis. Deho amar beperek mishemeiso mutar lefon. We're going to see bracha in Gemara in brachas. Sofek kora ms v'yatziv sofek lekora. If a person doesn't remember whether he already said the bracha ms v'yatziv inochon, you know, this is of course the bracha that follows the Shema in the morning, or sofek lekora, maybe he forgot to do it, then in that particular case, chozer v'kore, then he does, he again repeats it, v'lo atzminim is sofek, and we do not prohibit that person because we suspect that maybe Mishum lo sisa, that he would be violating the commandment, you know, not to take God's name in vain. On the contrary, why? And also the lo sisa, you know, not to take God's name in vain. Umotzi shem shemayim batola. Okay, and he was saying God's name, in vain. Okay, dasmino befera kama the tamura, which we put in. So, all right. Now, I want to shorten this a little bit over here because there is a great deal. So I'm going down a few lines right now. Okay? It says, Mishum Hochi, I don't know if you can see it over there, it's a few lines from where I left off over there. Okay? Mishum Hochi. For this reason, it says, Hoyoyochel Levorech b'chol mitzvahs. Right? You can make a bracha for any of the mitzvahs. The Yochel Lomar, and he can also say, Vitzivanu. I praise God, right? We praise God who has commanded us, even though the commandment was not given. in the Torah. You understand? Kevin de Bechayev bin Rabbanim, because the answer is that the rabbi said that this is the proper thing to do. Kidakoma beperek babimatlikin, as it is written, as they say in the Gemara, chapter babimatlikin, which is of course the second chapter in Gemara Shabbos, says, Heichon Sivanu, where did the Rebbeinu Shalom give us such a commandment? Now, specifically, of course, over there, what bracha are they talking about in Baba Matlikin? Right. Ladnik Ne'er Shel Shabbos, Ladnik Ne'er Shel Chanukah, Ladnik Ne'er Shel Yontov, whatever it may be. Where do we find in the Torah that says that we have to, that it's a mitzvah to do it? The answer is it's not in the Torah, but this is what? This is with the Rabbanim, the rabbis said. Now, if the rabbis gave their sanction to it, then in that particular case, we do make a bracha in order to fulfill it. And therefore, they looked for some sort of, as we would say, a remez, in other words, a hint in the Torah itself that would give justification to the fact that the rabbis had the authority to do what? To make mitzvahs, right? And to say not only can we make a mitzvah, but also that we are permitted to recite a bracha, the performance of the mitzvah. And they get it from Melo Sosur. What is Melo Sosur? So the answer is, it speaks over there. We have a story, for example, about the Zokin Mamre, okay? I know, we had it, we discussed it sometimes, I think. So the Zokin Mamre is something that we find in Chumash Devarim, where there is a scholar who comes out with a contrary opinion to what the authorities say is the proper procedure. Okay. Now, if he comes out with it and he insists, in spite of the fact that he's been told, and they can summon him to the best in Hagodol and so on and so forth. But the point that we're making over here is that the rabbis do have the authority to do what? To make such mitzvahs, okay? And if they have the authority to make a mitzvah, as for example, that we should light Ner Shel Shabbos, or to light a Ner Shel Chanukah, or for example, to make with Megillas Esther, for example, written at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Obviously not, it came much later. Nevertheless, it is what? It's a mitzvah, right? Al Mikra Megillah, to read the Megillah. Understand? So, in all these cases, therefore, what are we saying? We are saying that if people want to fulfill these mitzvahs, which are strictly speaking, voluntary from the point of view of Torah observance, although they are from the rabbis, then you have the authority to recite the bracha. Okay? All right. Yes.
These are extra mitzvahs. The rabbonim, they are not included in the 613.
Yeah, right.
But we still say that there are 613 mitzvahs.
Yeah, yeah.
Where do these come in? How do you count? What's the status? These are Torah.
Right. In other words, the 613 are commandments from the Torah. That's midoraisa.
Right.
But then we have, as I said, we have what we call mitzvos derabbanan. Okay?
Technically, there are more than 613.
Yeah, then, from that point of view, definitely there are. Of course, Bezman Hazer, we don't have a base on Mikdash. Or for not living in Eretz Yisrael or something, so certain of the mitzvahs that are written in the Torah are not, we cannot fulfill them, obviously. Okay. Anyway, I want to summarize now what is the practical decision that we have over here. Okay? Practical decision number one is that women are permitted to do what? To make a bracha over a lulav and an esrog, even though what? It's a mitzvah shazman grama. Okay? They are permitted to sit in the sukkah and to say a bracha, Asher Kedisham Tzavah Tzivonu Le'i Sheba Sukkah. Correct? these are not prohibited. I mentioned once many years ago that I had a brother-in-law, Oliver Shalom, a great Hanatochim, who came to visit, happens to be, he was married to Anne's sister, okay? We came to visit him once during Cholovei Sukkos, and had a small sukkah over there. So, at any rate, you know, he mentioned the sukkah, he says, women are not allowed to sit in the sukkah, okay? The job of a woman is what? To prepare the food and to bring it out to the husband or the family sitting in the sukkah. So I said, my beer gate is nicht. My wife, my children, we all sit together in the sukkah. I think that that's the right way to do it. Okay. Because in the final analysis, it falls exactly in the same category. Okay? That even though a woman is not commanded to do so, midoraisa, but nevertheless, every mitzvah that she takes upon herself, which is a mitzvah of Rabbanan, that she's permitted to do it, then in that particular case, she's also permitted to recite the bracha for it. But now I want to go to the last line of this Tosfos, okay?
Excuse me, this is the peripheral.